back with the Barologist on Radio 3CR. A summit on leadership, art and disability, driving changes from afar. Good afternoon and welcome to Back with the Barologist. My name is Rafael Caleb. We're discussing disability, art and leadership. And right now on the line, I have Heidi Everett. Welcome to the show, Heidi.
Thank you, Rafael. Thank you for having me.
Now, as I said, Heidi, we're discussing art, leadership and disability. Now, because there's so many leadership positions that you hold or have been associated with, how shall we introduce you? Or can you tell us a bit about yourself to start with?
I think you did a pretty good introduction just before, but I'm a multimedia artist. So as an artist myself, I am a musician and a writer, illustrator, filmmaker. I've even dabbled in stand-up comedy, and I do a lot of public talking as well, public speaking. And I also produce community projects, and one of those is called Skip the Ink. And I believe you're part of that, Raphael.
Well, that's right, Heidi. But some of the leadership positions that you do hold are chairperson of Skitsy Inc. with Mojo Film Festival.
Yes.
As a mentor with, or former mentor with Writers Victoria.
Yeah, you have to keep reminding me what the question was, because I'm really good at going off on tangents.
Well, that's okay. We're going to actually, what I'm going to do, Heidi, is I'll talk you through this. Now, the leadership positions which Heidi does hold is as a mentor at Writers Victoria, a mentor at Nexus with Arts Access Victoria, chairperson of Mojo Film Festival, and a theatre company called Qualia, which won the Access Inclusion Awards at Melbourne Fringe in 2019, and a former Australian representative to Arts Unlimited across England. Now, that's quite an array of leadership positions, Heidi.
You've done your homework. Thank you, Raphael. You've done much better than I could do. I suppose you pretty much summed up everything I do there in terms of that. Qualia Theatre, I think, is something I'm really proud of as well, because it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time, is make theatre about the lived experience inside public psych wards.
Right. Now, why is that actually important to make this type of theatre and films?
Well, you can't actually take a camera inside these places and film very easily. You can do your own selfies and things, but to actually film what goes on in these places, it's very hard to do that. So theatre, to me, is kind of the next best thing. So it's really important that people get to show what goes on in unseen places. And Qualia Theatre is on that journey of revealing what goes on in public psych wards.
Right, so that's really about developing leadership to bring art, which is accessible, about subjects wouldn't that be touched on otherwise?
That's right, yeah. It's kind of like the last frontier of disability, which is the public mental health system. So I've kind of taken it on myself for the last 15 years or so to actually create spaces where people with lived experience of the public psych system can tell their story and show their story. And, you know, I love supporting other people to do that. I'm not very good at spruiking my own self, as you've just experienced. And I guess, you know, that's what I really love doing, is creating spaces for other people to do their things.
Well, look, one of the qualities about leadership is modesty, and I understand the modesty part about not spruiking your own projects. Heidi, I get it.
It's hard.
Right. Now, we're going to actually take some of the really, really big picture stuff. Because you've got such a large array of actually experience, now, as far as leadership goes, why does disability art leadership need accessible arts?
Do you mean in terms of audiences or in terms of people on stage or both?
Both.
Both, yeah, because one seems to be getting a lot of attention and the other one doesn't. So in terms of accessible stages, it's all about authentic content and authentic storytelling. And I think unless you've been through something, I don't know if you kind of have the right to speak about it, about somebody else's story. So, you know, I understand that's acting and everything, but I think there's a lot more room for people with stories, who own stories, to tell their own stories. And it's really important that directors and filmmakers give over those spaces. So it's not just giving over space for people to feature, it's actually giving over the camera and the director's chair as well. And so I'm really interested in that. In terms of audiences, we've got a long way to go. And I think, you know, it's about everyone speaking up and saying, I suffer from post-traumatic stress, I need a seat near the door, and being consistent about that.
Right.
And also, yeah, not being stuck in a seat in the middle of Hamer Hall and then having to climb over everyone to get out.
Right, so things like trigger warnings then come into live theatre about what a person can expect. Like, is it interactive where members of the audience are asked or maybe touched by cast members, or they get questions, loud sounds, dim lights, Auslan interpreters?
Yeah, it's everything like that. And in terms of post-traumatic stress and neurodiversity, it's a brand new area of access, and we all need to work together to kind of request our needs are met in terms of that kind of thing. So it is about listing trigger warnings on a theatre piece. It is about having the number for Lifeline after a film, you know, that goes into some serious places. And it is about consulting with the lived experience community if you're going to put on a work that doesn't feature people with lived experience.
Okay, now, is it from an audience perspective, one of the groundbreaking things which Koala Theatre did at Melbourne Fringe, they had I think it's called a companion animal.
Yes.
Right. What actually is a companion animal? I'm not too sure of the exact terminology. Or assistance dog.
And are you talking about Bailey?
I'm talking about when there's a dog there or a pet which the audience can engage with, which assists people.
Yeah, that was Bailey. So at Qualia Theatre, we had Therapy Animals Australia bring a dog in called Bailey, and he was a beautiful golden retriever and just wanted cuddles from everybody. And he was there for everybody just to, you know, launch cuddles and kisses on, and he returned them, you know, equally. And he was there before show and during show and after show for anybody who needed counselling sessions. Because Bailey can speak every language, he knows sign language, and, you know, so he's accessible to everybody. And so if you felt at all uncomfortable or triggered, then Bailey was there for you to go and sit with, and he was very good at sitting on people too. So,
right, so for the purpose of terminology, we're really talking about a therapy animal.
Yeah, so Bailey was a therapy animal. But in terms of assistance animals, you know, in psych distress, it's really important that people have similar rights with assistance animals, because, you know, some people can't go out the front door for months on end, but if they have their dog with them, that gets them out. So it's equally an assistance to have that dog with them, and it's hard to say, no, you can't bring that dog here. And in saying that, psychiatric animals have to be accredited by an agency. They can't just, you know, walk in with any old animal. It has to be accredited to receive that level.
Right. Now, getting back into arts leadership and disability as far as therapy animals go, now, how come a lot of shows, should more people have therapy animals available to make them more accessible?
Well, you know, these dogs in particular, they're highly trained dogs and they've been selected for their people abilities. So they love people. They're calm dogs and they've been trained to pick up signs from people who are struggling with anxiety. So it kind of pays off to have, you know, a Bailey at a show because it shows that, you know, your audiences are cared about. And I think it pays off for people who might be triggered. They're not going home feeling terrible about themselves. So it is an access requirement to look after your audiences. And if you're going to have triggering content, then why not have something like Bailey at your show? Or why not invite people to bring their own assistance dogs?
Now, specifically in regards to Qualia, that was showing at Melbourne Fringe. Now, what steps did you do to try to find a venue that you are actually happy with from an accessible point of view to make sure that people, both the audiences could access it and the actors and actresses could access it too?
Well, we're really, really, really lucky because Northcote Town Hall Arts Centre actually, you know, they worked their butts off to have Qualia there. So they really believed in Qualia and they supported us in every way they could. They were absolutely fantastic. So, you know, I'm really, really grateful for Darabin Arts and Northcote Town Hall Arts Centre. But they just, you know, they went above and beyond what would be normally expected at a venue.
Well, why don't we have a big round of applause for Northcote Town Centre? Let's have a big round of applause.
Yay!
From an accessible point of view, I guess I should have put a trigger warning about that, Heidi. it is a very good round of applause. Thank you very much, Lauren McLeish, who's panelling.
Thanks, Lauren.
This is all about what arts, disability and leadership is about. It's about learning on the job, and every experience is a good one because we learn what to do and what not to do as well, eh?
Yeah, well, if everyone can have a round of applause every time they get up, then, you know, let's bring it on.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. About some of the groundbreaking things that, Heidi, you've done as part of your inclusive arts practice and you've stepped up with the leadership roles. Let's talk Mojo Film Festival. What is Mojo Film Festival?
Mojo Film Festival is short films made by people with living experience of mental illness. So we saw a real need for, short films made about schizophrenia and mental illness that wasn't made by people who don't live that reality. So if you Google short film schizophrenia, you get thousands and thousands of these films with the tagline, "I don't have schizophrenia, but this is what I think it's like," or "this is what my friend has," or...
So is it Mojo, you know, Film Festival is really about an authentic experience or an authentic perspective from people with mental illnesses to tell their side of the story about what's actually important to them?
Yes.
Not from somebody else's point of view.
Yeah, and it might not even be about mental illness or schizophrenia. It might be about dogs or airplanes, but it's made... The important thing is the person with lived experience is behind the camera making it. So they're in absolute total control of how that film and how that project turns out. there's no one telling them you should do this or, you know. And Mojo also does run workshops in short filmmaking, but in no way do we, you know, kind of veto or censor that experience of learning how to make short films. So we run professional workshops in short film.
Well, I'm going to take ownership of this one, Heidi, is that
one
of the things out of respect for Heidi Everett, I've known Heidi for 25 years approximately, and with Mojo Film Festival, I did collaborate with Heidi Everett to put together a short film called The Honorary Schizophrenic.
Yes, and that started this year's Mojo Film Festival at Melbourne Town Hall. And thank you, Raphael, for making that film. I never got to see it before it was screened, so I was absolutely wowed by it.
Yeah, well, it's that for the benefit of listeners, we're going to do a little bit of a teaser about this so people have an idea what to expect at the Mojo Film Festival on May 24th in 2020, which is that The Honorary Schizophrenic's opening lines were, "Welcome to Disability Dating. On tonight's show, we welcome back Raphael and Heidi. Let's revisit their first meeting." It was a very light-hearted look at mental illness and the realities of maybe relationships, and that's important as far as leadership goes. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Right, so what are your thoughts about, like, one of the things that, say, from Mojo Film Festival, regarding, let's say, why do you think males are reluctant to talk about their experiences with mental health or to make a short film about it?
Fantastic question.
And what can be done about it?
Yes, fantastic question. Thank you. So this is nothing against women because I am one, and why would I knock myself? But it's often women who are up on stage talking about advocacy at conferences and whatnot. And, you know, the balance of the male voice is lacking, and it's kind of different to the rest of what is going on in society, because for some reason, I don't know why or what or whatever, but we need to make space for males to hold voice in advocacy. And so I'm very aware of that. And, you know, I used to teach songwriting with Wild at Heart Community Arts, and the songs that came from blokes just break your heart, you know, and we need to see more and more of that, more spaces that support and, you know, seek out blokes to tell their stories.
Well, it's one of the things that Mojo Film Festival does from a male perspective. They've got a bloke, Sean Wass, Merlin Keepsake Productions. He's done a diploma in film and television, who's done a lot of advocacy around mental health, around personal perspective, and is looking to assist specifically people, males, about their stories and their experiences.
Yeah, Sean's great, and he's a real fire. Starter and keeper in this network too. So yeah, look out for Sean Wass. Also yourself, Raphael. You know what you're doing is incredible. And what I like about Schizzy Inc. and Mojo, and it's a real good balance between men and women and the voices that in that. And I'm really proud of that. I'm proud that we have a good balance.
Yeah, look, but as far as, let's say, women really speaking up and taking the lead roles as far as advocacy goes, research has actually shown that women more readily adapt to new technology and new ideas than men do. And I can see where that's actually coming from. However, I think that from a disability arts leadership perspective, I'd be looking at ratios of, let's say, 75% of people, I'm going to actually really broaden this question up, because this is like an official summit on disability arts and leadership, Heidi, for your information. and it's actually to look at the big picture stuff, because there's not just the male and female perspective. I think from that from let's say a board of management point of view, I think there should be more people that identify as females on boards. I'm looking about maybe 65-70%. Then looking at a percentage of males to get involved at that level, and also people who identify as non-binary as well. Is that it's an absolutely really broad area. Is that disability arts and leadership is all inclusive. It's about a huge perspective about what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's kind of converse to what's going on on the stage, and I agree with that there needs to be more women and gender diverse people on boards and in places of management. I think where the arts is concerned in terms of advocacy and storytelling, when you look at mental illness, it's often related to post-traumatic stress, and that's what I'm coming from, is that fellas need to tell those stories more.
Yeah, and look, that's excellent. I'm glad that you've actually brought that. Now, again, the really, really big picture stuff. I mean, how can artists who identify as having a disability, what can they do to lead the discussions in their own projects? Or what can they do about this problems like, let's say, funding, for example, trying to get accessible areas, or even trying to engage with the bigger community? What can they do from a practical point of view?
I think start your own business is my first advice. And I don't mean business in terms of an office and photocopiers and you know that, but it doesn't cost anything to get an ABN. And you just come up with your own business name and start making your own work, and don't ask other people for permission to join their work. Do your own. And, you know, in terms of funding and things, all you need is a website and an ABN and off you go. And it's surprising where you can get money from to run things. I've not been successful in a mainstream funding round yet, but
well, I actually think that actually could be done. That's really a matter of time, Heidi, with what you've actually done, is that the facts are that with what you've actually done there from, let's say, an innovative practice with Mojo Film Festival, Koala Theatre, is that, and even with the mentoring with Nexus, which was mentoring with young people, I think it was between the ages of 18 and 25, is that I'm pretty sure that a government funding body would be looking at someone with that depth and range of experiences to engage with the community, and let's hope that the universe is listening.
Let's hope so, Raphael. Let's hope so. Just put it out there and who knows who's listening.
Okay, and speaking of putting it straight out there, okay, what's the big dream list? How much would you like to actually make the big dreams happen for you, and what are they?
Oh, well, my biggest dream is what the people who know me know this, and it's not just my dream, it's a global dream, is to start a farm with horses and dogs and goats and donkeys, where people with lived experience of trauma can come and stay and work and adopt an animal and just work the land, learn how to, you know, love the soil and put their hands in the soil and get drenched in a pouring rainstorm, and, you know, that's my big picture dreaming.
Right, so what are we looking at? We're looking at about $250,000 or more.
Oh, it'd be more, because to get a property near an accessible train line, that would be the first.
Okay, we're looking at. Do you think we're looking at about $2 million then?
I think, you know, $1 million would be the benchmark to start sensibly, and that would be to employ a manager and have a board and, you know, employ staff to do that and fit the place out, you know, properly so people in wheelchairs can come. And, you know, I think $1 million would be a nice little figure to start with.
Well, let's actually put that into the universe for some of those, hoping there's a wealthy benefactor, is that we're going to do a little bit of a showreel for Heidi Everett at this point. Like I said, the introduction is that Heidi Everett is the chairperson of Mojo Film Festival, former Australian representative at the Arts Unlimited Conference, Mentor at Writers Victoria, a mentor at Nexus at Arts Access Victoria, and founded Qualia that won the Access Inclusion Awards at Melbourne Fringe Festival 2019. And additionally, Heidi has won a number of singer-songwriting competitions and been a finalist in numerous others. It's a pretty good starting point if you're actually looking to. Now, have you got an organisation such as Skitsy Inc.? Does that have tax deductibility status?
Yes, it does. We're registered for that. And so if anyone wants to donate a couple of dollars, then you can definitely claim that back on tax.
Right. Well, that's also part of the game. Now, how difficult, as far as leadership goes, was it to go through a process to gain tax deductibility status?
It's probably taken 10 years to get to this point, and it takes probably about 6 months to actually do the paperwork and get it approved. And a big shout out to Helen Morris, who's done so much work on that side of it. You know, imagine that cheering going now for Helen.
Well, why don't we have a big round of applause for Helen too? And this has got a trigger warning for you, Heidi.
Yeah, I'm moving the phone.
It's a nice big round of applause. It certainly is a very good round of applause, if you ask me, Heidi.
It's a great one. Yeah, so in terms of the paperwork, that takes about 6 months. But in terms of establishing a consistent committee and establishing events and projects, that took about 10 years. And can we have another round of applause for the fabulous Skitsy Inc. committee, please?
Because yeah, we of course we'll give you another. Yeah. We'll give Skitsy Inc. a big round of applause too. I mean, while this applause actually sounds absolutely marvellous, Heidi, is we are fast running out of time. but one of the things that I really need to ask this question, because of what you've actually done as far as in the regard that the whole community holds you in, if you were to give one piece of advice to people with a disability who are looking to start an arts practice, what is it?
Register for an ABN so you can make lots and lots of money, and yeah, and start a website, because it you wouldn't believe how many times I ask people where I can find them on the internet, and they say they don't have a web presence. So you can start one for free on Weebly or Wix. You know, that's not a product placement, but just giving some advice there.
Yep.
Get a website. Goodness, and upload stuff.
Well, I'm actually going to take you up on this one, Heidi, just because I need to have the last word on this one, is that while I do have my own ABN, I've taken the opposite approach, is that I intentionally don't have a website, because I figured that if I connected to everybody who did have websites, that was far better for me in the longer term, so they could absolutely upload what I needed them to.
Absolutely. And Raphael, you are actually a part of many people's websites. So you might not have one yourself, but you're definitely part of other people's work practice.
Right. Well, that's very kind of you, Heidi. But I've just been giving up the wind-up signals. So would like to thank Heidi Everett, chairperson of Mojo Film Festival and the founder of Qualia that won the Access Inclusion Awards at Melbourne Fringe Festival. Thank you very much for your time, Heidi.
Thank you so much, Raphael. And who's on the sound effects? Is it Loz there?
Is it? This is a person we're going to actually talk to her about Mojo Film Fest at some stage. Would like to say goodbye to Heidi. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to Loz McLeish and Murdoch McLeish for coming to panel. Much appreciated. You've been listening to Back with the Barologist, a summer series on arts, disability and leadership. Thank you very much. Keep listening to 3CR. And if you don't think the revolution has started, you've been listening to the wrong station. See you next time. Thank you very much and goodbye.
friends. I love school to be with my friends. I love school to be with my friends. Now I know it's going to end. I'm just the same as everybody else. I'm just the same as everybody else. I'm just the same as everybody else. I'm just the same as everybody else.
Thank you very much. We're going to just play a song, Just the Same by The Calm Before the Storm. Next up, we have got an interview with Jeremy Hawkes, recipient of the 2018-19 Create New South Wales Fellowship. Good afternoon. My name is Rafael Caleb, and I am talking with Jeremy Hawkes. How are you today, Jeremy?
I'm very, very well, thank you. Still suffering a bit of jet lag, but pretty good.
Well, it's that as an international artist, Jeremy, we know that we'll come to that a bit later on. You've been collaborating with Rachel Gadsden overseas, but let's have a talk about your creativity journey. What do you think?
About my creative journey?
Yep, it certainly is.
What do I think about it? Well, it's ongoing and it seems to be gathering momentum, which is good at my age.
Gathering momentum is that earlier this year, you were the recipient of a substantial grant from Create New South Wales. Would you tell us about it?
Yeah, actually that was towards the end of last year that the project got underway in May of this year. Yeah, I was lucky enough to be the recipient of a Create New South Wales Professional Development Fellowship for regional artists or artists with disability, which was just incredible and just wonderful.
And what did this grant assist you with doing, Jeremy?
I put in an application to have a funded residency in both New York City and Berlin. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to take up the opportunity in New York because they cancelled the residency. But I've just spent 4 months in Berlin in a dedicated studio at the Berlin Art Institute. And I've got a few other side projects, including sort of professional development, research and development, studio time, purchase of equipment, all that sort of thing that goes into being a visual artist.
Now, that sounds absolutely incredible, but regarding this series, Back with the Barologists, we're talking about art, disability and leadership. Now, what happens when a person with a disability wants to travel overseas for an extended period of time, like 4 months?
Gee, it's not easy, that's for sure. and I must admit, I hadn't considered all the details that were going to be involved in being away for such an extended period. But there's definitely a lot to think about, particularly in terms of any access requirements you might need. Quite a few issues with Centrelink and keeping the disability support pension while you're overseas, which I wasn't able to do. There's quite a bit that goes into it. And, of course, I think there are as many access requirements as there are people with disabilities, and that needs to be really thought through and budgeted and accounted for before you undertake, you know, such a journey. But as they say, you don't know what you don't know. So it was a very big learning curve for me, because I thought I'd considered everything that I needed to, but I hadn't, and so had to do a lot of it sort of on the run, as it were.
Right, so it's an ongoing big learning curve. Now, as part of going overseas, now, earlier this year, Rachel Gazdin was out in Australia, and I believe that you had the opportunity to collaborate with Rachel Gazdin while you were across travelling.
No, it hasn't actually started yet. I've been incredibly lucky to get the Australia Council funding for the supported mentorship. So Rachel and I have spoken, well, you know, we've exchanged many, many, many emails, and we've spoken on the phone a number of times. But, we haven't actually begun officially the mentorship, though she's such a generous and kind person. You know, she's already sort of providing, you know, a lot of advice to me, and we're in touch quite regularly. But in terms of it officially beginning, that it doesn't officially begin until mid-December.
Until mid-December. Well, that's certainly something to look up to. Now, so you've got some, during my research, part of you've got some of these fantastic quotes, like, "I'm still waiting to grow up." Now, that's absolutely marvellous. Why is that important from part of a creative journey about, like, without trying to sound kind of like immaturity, growing up and assisting you to keep doing what you're trying to do? Why is that important?
Oh, I can't remember saying that, but it does very much sound like me. Maybe a psychoanalyst could answer that a bit better than me. But I think, as an artist or as a creative, it's a lifelong journey, you know, like you're constantly learning and evolving. And I'm one of those artists who I hope I never actually arrive. You know, I hope I never get to a point where I'm completely satisfied with what I do, because I think, A, you're either sort of misreading it, or B, maybe you've run out of ideas. So I think for me, you know, that sort of ties in with how I see my maturity levels, is that, it's part of the creative process and part of being human, and they're very interrelated. A bit of immaturity keeps you young.
Totally with you with that one, Jeremy, is that that's my experience too. Like, part of the creative journey which you've had is being able to evolve over a number of different mediums, starting from as a young teenager with doodling, then there was the sculpture that came in it, then painting came into it, I think it was some photography as well.
I always wanted to be an artist. Even as a child, I couldn't really imagine doing anything else, and I still can't imagine doing anything else. As you say, that it's my creative process has gone through many sort of different phases. I find it kind of quite interesting and a bit bewildering when I look back over the years at all the various different sorts of media and styles I've used, because you're never really aware that you are sort of changing. It's all day by day, as is life, I guess. But a really significant thing, of course, that happened to me that changed my art practice was having a workplace injury in 2007 and acquiring a physical disability, and I had to really, really rethink and renegotiate my creative practice from the ground up. And at the time, it seemed like an absolute disaster. But 12 years later, and I can see that there were some good things that came out of that.
Right, and I think it's, again, having had this workplace injury, that I think you incorporated that as part of your art practice with partial, I think it's paralysis of your right hand, being right-handed, and maybe some tremors, and it comes through. I think you, I remember seeing that it came through as part of your painting.
Yeah, that's right. It seemed like a disaster at the time. You know, I'm very, very right-handed. You know, and then yeah, the injury affected the right side of my body, and in particular my right hand. And for a number of years, it did. This just seemed, you know, like a, you know, a nail in a coffin almost, in that, you know, I can't be an artist anymore because I don't have complete control over my physicality. But I quickly realised that, you know, artists always work with limitations, be they financial or things around disability or access to space. So, you know, we never have exactly what it is that we want in order to create. So I think I sort of quickly worked out, sort of by trial and error, that this change in my physicality was just that. It was a change. It was neither negative or positive. And, you know, it's a way of looking at it and a way of sort of trying to use it and reappropriate my body that could be a good thing.
Now, Jeremy, what's some practical advice you would give to artists with a disability as part of their journey?
Oh, gee. Don't give up. A lot of artists with or without disability, you know, understandably give up because there's not much money in it, you know, unless you're one of the lucky very few percent who can make a living out of it. So I think, you know, persistence. And I know for me, I've always been, a fairly hard worker, but it was only when acquiring a disability that I realised that I was going to have to work twice as hard as I had been in order to get any sort of recognition or to, you know, sort of achieve that level that, you know, is called a professional artist or, you know, mid-career artist or something. So persistence and hard work are the only bits of advice I can really sort of give.
Right. Now, we're going to go on a slightly different tack before we give you the big dream question. What about collaborating with others, let's say, on social media?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
What about collaborating with others on social media or trying to actually network with other artists with a disability? Are there any groups out there that might interest people which you're aware of?
Well, definitely. After the 2018 Arts Access Australia Meeting Place Conference, which I was really lucky enough to be one of the recipients for the travel grant to get there, and that was just amazing. That was just an incredible conference. It was, it was a conference and consciousness raising, and it was a really life changing event. And out of that, and numerous discussions with people who are arts professionals, you know, sort of or arts workers, was that we didn't really have our own space in order to, you know, sort of form collaborations, you know, exchange information, have a complaint, find out what's going on, share opportunities, talk about our issues, talk about our problems. So out of that, I think it was the amazing Kath Duncan who actually got the ball rolling, but it came out of a conversation that a couple of us had, was just to form, you know, a sort of closed group on Facebook, which we called CAC, which was named by the amazing Suzanne Whiteman. And I think, you know, it's been just over 12 months, and I think we're close to 400 members, and It's been incredible. It's just grown exponentially, and I'm checking in on it a couple of times a day, and I've made incredible contacts through there and opportunities to collaborate and share information. And it's incredibly supportive. And like all good ideas, it seems really obvious now it's there, and we're sort of wondering why we didn't do this, you know, years ago.
Yeah, I can, said that we might get a couple of guests from CAC on part of this series too. Now, the last question for you, Jeremy, is a big wrap-up question because we're fast running, coming to time for us to go. What is the big dream, creative dream for you, and what would you need to achieve it?
He sent me that question early this morning, and I've been thinking about it ever since. And my ideas range from, you know, like the very practical and what is maybe achievable to what is the really big creative dream. And I've got so many, but I sort of arrived upon this answer that a couple of years ago I had a dream that I was part of a disability artist collective, and somehow we inherited an old oil tanker, like battleship. And so we filled it full of artists and creative people with disability, and we sort of became art pirates. And we were sailing around the world and doing creative projects to change the world and make it a better place. And it was one of the, you know, it was one of those dreams where you just wake up from laughing your head off and then going, wow, what a brilliant idea.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah. My subconscious is quite imaginative. So I really want that. I want a great big pirate ship for us all to travel around the world in.
Right. So the dream then would be really, to make this a practical one, would be a huge sort of like ship to fly, to like transport people around the world with enough supplies, with internet contact, conferencing, the whole thing, where it was welcomed,
completely accessible, you know,
and just bypassing, it was welcomed by all countries everywhere, and it was all inclusive. Sounds sensational, creating that better world.
So can we get
a quick estimate? What do you think that's worth?
Oh, what's it worth? It's priceless. But hopefully someone will hear this and donate us a ship. That would be great.
Well, okay. Well, that's what we're going to put out there for listeners. If you happen to know of a nice big cruise ship that you'd actually come up with some type of donation to help create with a disability to make a better world, we're putting that one out there. How does that sound to you, Jeremy?
That sounds great. And I expect an answer by Friday. That would be terrific.
Well, I'd expect an answer by last Friday. Now, the last question for you, Jeremy, what's the best way for people to get in contact with you? Have you got a website?
I do have a website. It's www.jeremyhawkes.com.au, and that's always in the process of updating. I think I can, you know, you can probably contact me through Arts Access Australia or Accessible Arts New South Wales or Facebook. I have a lot of people from all over the place reaching out to me, which is really humbling and really gratifying. And I really welcome it.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jeremy, for your time. We greatly appreciate it. This is part of Arts and Disability and Leadership. My name's Rafael Caleb. I have been talking with Jeremy Hawkes, the recipient of the 2018 New South Wales Creative Development Fellowship. Thank you very much for your time, Jeremy.
Thank you. Real pleasure.
My name is Rafael Caleb. I've just been talking with Jeremy Hawkes, recipient of Create New South Wales Fellowship 2018-19. Now, part of this series, Back with the Barologist, a summit on disability, art and leadership. There's many disability artists, advocates who are very passionate, whom unfortunately I wasn't able to interview everybody for. So I'm going to call out a few people for all their outstanding contributions to leadership, arts and disability. The first person that springs to mind is Carly Finlay, who's also a well-known media personality and wrote Say Hello earlier this year. Larissa McFarlane readily comes to mind with her work with Disability Pride is Back, an art mural over in Footscray. Other disability artists include people like Jonathan Goodfellow, who has got a art exhibition, I think it's Beyond the Blue in the Deep, which opens at No Vacancy Gallery in December. And that will run from the 19th of December to the 26th of December this year. And he collaborated with Larissa McFarlane and Shel DeStefano. Shel DeStefano is a very talented, gifted deaf artist who, over the course of this year, she's been a finalist in the Banyul Art Prize. She's just being awarded residency across in Milan in Italy. She's also got a residency that's in Dandenong. And she's being a finalist in quite a number of other events that happen to escape me just at the moment. Now, Shell also, at part of Melbourne Fringe Festival, put together an outstanding performance called the Auslan Movement. The Auslan Movement, how it fits into leadership, arts and disability, because Shell is deaf, she actually made a play about deaf culture to help people educate the hearing community about the role that deaf people played in the community, how important it was to include with everyone, the barriers, the stress, the aggravation, and how to go about life. I'd also like to, another person that springs to mind with arts or disability arts and leadership is Arts Access Victoria. Over the course of this year, they've been putting together some artist engagement network meetings. I would suggest that people contact Arts Access Victoria in January. Those meetings should start back again for February, which is a fantastic opportunity for people to collaborate together. Over the course of the year, another artist is Melody Shortade. Melody, in 2019, started the year by directing a play called Woven, which was showing at Gasworks. Melody has also recorded a CD. We're going to play a few songs from it over the next couple of shows. The CD is called Cower Between Legs, which is, it's a great little CD. It's just, they're all songs about issues around disability. Thank you very much, Melody, for getting in contact with the barologist and leaving the CD for us to play. One of the most important people that I believe that is an up-and-coming person in the leadership, arts and disability movement will be Sean Avon Wass. He's a video director. He's also got a certificate in mental health, drug and alcohol, I think it is, along with a diploma in screenwriting and television from RMIT. He was also involved with the Royal Commission. So we've got some very exciting people and who are going to come through and take the next generation to help people understand how important art is to people with a disability. We're going to go out with a song called Silence by Uproar. Thank you very much. This is Back with the Barologist. Our next show is on the 2nd of January 2020. Happy New Year to everyone. And let us not sit in silence. Let's go out with this big song, Silence by Uproar. Thank you very much to Andy Britt for all your panelling. Fantastic. Goodbye.
Deadly, comfort of silence, quiet together to dream, softly, heat a pea drop, silent beauty of a flower, deathly silence. Silence is your time for angels sitting on your shoulders. Silent hunter, shadows, whispers, 2 minute silence, museums and art galleries and libraries, winter silence, frosty silence, silence of respect, fish swimming silently, birds in flight, taking a vow of silence, summer breeze, silence of the sea, silent spoken words, silent majority, silent menace, secrecy, using silence as power, cat burger silence, silent beating heart love, silent sleep, church silence, funeral silence, still, calm, 3 minute silence. Some people have a lifetime of silence. Stop. Calm. Silence.